As we hear more about the relationship of the BRCA2 gene mutation and cancer, we're also learning about their role in the development of certain reproductive organs. Today, we're speaking with Professor David Zengin on this episode of Hadassah On Call.
This is Hadassah On Call, New Frontiers in Medicine. In each episode, we go behind the headlines with the Hadassah Medical Organization and look at the work changing what's possible, helping you understand the medical breakthroughs impacting our lives. From neurological malfunction to sexual dysfunction, from striving for peace through medicine to operating room robots. This is Hadassah On Call. Here's Melanie Cole.
Welcome. My guest today is Professor David Zengin. He's the director of the Division of Pediatric Endocrinology and Diabetes at the Hadassah Medical Organization in Jerusalem. Professor, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to Hadassah Medical Organization.
Well, I was born in Israel to parents that survived the Holocaust coming from Holland, and went to, after my military service, the obligatory one, I went to Hadassah Medical School. I studied there for 6 years and then went for internship to see some other hospital in the Tel Aviv area, but couldn't help it because I loved the the excellence of the hospital, the trying to always find a new solution and to find a new explanation for things that were not understood before. This drive was very, very prominent at Hadassah, and that brought me back to do my residency at the pediatric service at Hadassah. And then I went to a fellowship in pediatric endocrinology at Harvard Medical School, at Mass General Hospital and Joslin Diabetes Center. And then upon return back to Hadassah, after 3.5 years in Boston, I started to work in pediatric endocrinology. And since 2004 or 3, I am the director of the Division of Pediatric Endocrinology.
Professor, as head of pediatric endocrinology at Hadassah Medical Organization, can you give our listeners a brief overview of your specialty and how your work as an endocrinologist relates to ovarian development and puberty?
Yes. So I will say a few words about my eagerness towards pediatric endocrinology. So pediatric endocrinology deals with the hormones of children and problems with the hormones of children. The one big drive towards pediatric endocrinology, I would say, is one, these are diseases that can be very, very sophisticated, but you can treat. And second is that in spite of these diseases being sophisticated, you look for an explanation, and there is an analytical way to get to explaining the disease, which is different from many other fields in medicine where you know, okay, we treat with this medication, but we don't really understand the mechanism. Endocrinology is very unique in the aspect that you look for a mechanism. And the hormones include, well, the main parts of this field are juvenile diabetes. This is about a third of the field or a third of the patients that we see. And this, in this, we follow children from a very early age into their adulthood when they get this very terrible disease, but still we treat them with insulin and follow them. Then the other third is problems of growth and puberty. That means children that are not growing normally and need, for example, growth hormone replacement therapy in order to grow to a normal final height, or children that are not going into puberty or going to puberty too early, too late, and so on, that do not spontaneously go into the normal stages of puberty, which we all know between in the teens, both in boys and girls. And the last third is all kinds of very, very unique diseases that are involving the thyroid gland, the adrenal gland, and also the gonads. The gonads are our fertility organs, the testes or the ovary. This has to do with puberty, but it has to do also with what is now known with disorders of sexual development. So you are born and it's not very clear if it is a male or a female because of a failure of the development of the gonad, the fertility organ. So that's the third or the diseases that I was talking about just now, of problems in the development of the testes or the ovary, is a part of the diseases that we are dealing with. And due to the, I would say, the high incidence of consanguinity, or what we call marriages within the family, cousins and so on, we have more cases of such problems in the Palestinian population, but also in some sects of the Jewish population. And this is why we do see cases, and we can learn from those cases a lot, and a lot in a way that it has an impact on all the population in terms of puberty, in terms of fertility.
Then please tell us about your new research just published in the New England Journal of Medicine based on the role of the BRCA2 gene in ovarian development.
Right. So this research, like all of what I'm involved in at least, starts always from a patient. So it is one patient that can teach us and can lead us towards fascinating findings and maybe opening a whole field, new field in medicine. So we are talking here about two girls, two sisters that came to us one after the other in a gap of 2 or 3 years. Both of them were about 14 to 15 years of age, and they did not go spontaneously into puberty. That means that they did not develop a breast enlargement, the normal breast development that we see at 10 or 11 years of age in a normal girl, and they did not develop or have periods. And that was in a family that all the other girls have periods at the age of 12, 12 and a half, which is the average and the normal age for having the first period in puberty. As such, we were looking what was the cause. And this case, these cases are like bread and butter in our clinic, that the people, and there are many girls and boys that get into puberty later. And this is a normal variant, but you have to see that it is really normal variant and they go into puberty. In this case, we saw that they are not going into puberty. We found on the laboratory examination that probably their ovaries are not functioning, because the hormones that come from the pituitary gland, which governs on the ovaries, were very high, trying to get these ovaries that are probably not there or not working to function, but it didn't help. And then we did an ultrasound to see if we can detect the ovary, and we could not detect the ovaries. So that led us to a question: why did these girls not develop an ovary? And at this point, we have to remember that three stages are important in the development of an ovary, or three elements are important. One is, as we all know, we all have chromosomes or genetic material. We have 23 couples of chromosomes, and the 22 of them are quite identical between the male and the female. But number 23 is a chromosome X and a chromosome Y in the male, XY. The female is two chromosomes of X, XX. So the first thing was to look if these girls have two X chromosomes, because if one is missing, that can be the cause. But we found that they have two normal X chromosomes, so that was not the story. So then you want to see, there are several genes that are important in the first stage of developing of the ovary, and these genes were also fine and normal. And this brought us that we had to go and look for another gene that is probably not known to be involved in the development of the ovary. And for that, as we had two sisters, that is obviously making it easier to find or giving it a higher chance to find, we did on them exome. Exome is a test where you sequence all the coding genetic material in the body of those two sisters. And there we wanted to find a common mutation or a common variant that may be the cause of their disease. We did find a mutation or two mutations in both of their alleles, which were not present in their siblings that were healthy. So they had the mutation and they were sick. The siblings had no mutation and were normal. And this is the first stage that you have to show when you want to say that a candidate, the mutation that you found are the reason for the disease. The mutation that we found were in the gene called BRCA2, breast cancer 2, a gene that is well known as a cause of ovarian and breast cancer. At this point, we were in some way surprised because it was never known that this gene is so important in the enabling the ovary to develop. But this is only the first stage because you have to really prove that this gene is really involved in the development of the ovary. And that brought us to make several experiments, knowing what is the function or the known function of BRCA2, of this gene. So first we had to show that, okay, the DNA, there is a mutation, but is there a protein that is produced from this genetic material? So number one was that we found that there is no protein. So the mutation causes these two girls not to have BRCA expression or function because there is no protein. But we still had to show what happens. And as we know that BRCA2 is involved in correcting damages that occur in the DNA. And we need to know that every day in our DNA, there are spots of damage and we have mechanisms to repair the damage. And if we don't repair this damage, it might lead to cancer. But on the other hand, if you don't correct the damage, you can't do proper divisions of cells. You can't make oocytes. You can't make germ cells because in order to make germ cells or oocytes, you need to divide the cell. And when you divide the cell, there is DNA damage within the division. And then if you don't correct it, the cell will not be able to produce the oocyte. So in order to prove that this is what's happening in these two sisters, we exposed their cells to radiation or to chemicals that cause damage to DNA. And what we saw is that their cells, when you expose them to any kind of damage to DNA, they cannot repair. And all their chromosomes are broken. While in normal people, when you expose them to the same amount of radiation or chemicals, the chromosomes stay intact because they correct the damage. So that was proof number two. And finally, what we did was to look what happens in an animal which is very, very much below the human being according to evolution. This was the Drosophila fly. And within the fly, which is very, very nice to work with when you talk about ovaries, because half of the body of the fly, the female, is the ovary. And when we looked at what happens with this fly, who lacks the gene BRCA2, we found that these flies that we artificially made them or genetically made them deficient of this protein BRCA2, they had no ovaries in the same way that we saw in our two sisters. And all these findings have definitely several implications that if you will ask, I will definitely go into the clinical implications of this finding.
That's absolutely fascinating, Professor. And the research on the flies and the stories that you've told are so interesting to hear. So help us to understand how what we're learning from you can be used to help detect and prevent ovarian cancer before the onset in the patient or her family.
Number one is that any child that is not growing through puberty, spontaneous puberty, and you find that the ovaries or the gonads, the fertility organ, is not present, you have to consider a problem of DNA repair, that you are not repairing properly the DNA. Now, when you look for these genes, it's not only BRCA2, but now also several other genes, then you can also, if you detect a mutation there, you can also be aware that this child may, in the future, unfortunately, develop a cancerous stage or a disease or cancer. Why? Because if he doesn't do the DNA repair that didn't enable him or her to produce germ cells or oocytes, the future will probably cause him not to do the DNA repair and that some of his cells change their fate into cells that are not restrained from normal division, and they will divide in an aberrant way and will be cancerous. So not only that you know the cause of no spontaneous puberty, but you can also know the chances and follow this child or girl, to follow them for the future, to prevent and to detect malignant situations prior to when they are clinically evident. And that may save the lives of these children. Moreover, if you know that such a child is carrying this mutation, probably he inherited the mutation from his family members. And in this New England Journal paper, we also mentioned that following our finding about the BRCA2 mutation in these two girls, the mother, we knew that she's a carrier of one of the mutations, and because of that, she went into screening of ovarian cancer and malignant cancer and breast cancer, and she was found to have an early stage of ovarian cancer, and that got her to treatment much earlier than she would if this was not the case. So these are several of the implications of this finding in our paper.
Professor, wrap it up for us. What would you like the take-home message to be from this segment and from your research so that we can all learn together about the role of the BRCA2 gene in ovarian development?
Well, I would take several points. Number one point is that, you know, we all have to be aware to clinical situations that are here in our homes and in our family. If we do see that children are not going into spontaneous puberty, we should not wait. And we should take the child to an evaluation by the pediatrician, definitely the pediatric endocrinologist, to see if there is an issue, to see that the puberty does come and does develop, and there are ways by the laboratory, by an X-ray, to know whether this child will go into puberty soon or the situation is that there is a disease behind and that we have to then search for the reason. So this is message number one. Message number two is that when you do get an understanding that there is here something that didn't work well or no development occurred, you have to look to understand the real reason for the situation, the real reason for the disease, because sometimes you can save lives And sometimes you can not only save lives of the immediate family, but you send a message to all the world, listen, look, these genes of DNA repair are important and necessary and essential for organ development. These genes of this case can tell you about preventing malignant situations in late stages where you can't anymore treat, and you can do treatment or prevention measures much prior to the time that they really danger the lives of the people that carry these variants. This has been done for years in BRCA1 and BRCA2. One of our co-authors, Professor Mary Claire King, she was the one who basically took the message of, okay, we need to do screening and to look for BRCA1 to prevent people from suffering from late-stage diseases. Here we do have a message that can be already detected very early in life. And I just want to add another element which is important. You know that in our case, the two girls did not develop even the first period. But there are cases, quite a number of them, that we have what we call premature ovarian failure. What does that mean? That means that a woman in her 20s or in her 30s, she had before the periods, she had before produced oocytes, but all of a sudden it stops. And this is very dramatic and very problematic, obviously, to women that during their child-bearing age, they cannot be fertile because all of a sudden the period stopped. Now, the question is, why is that happening? And we do suggest, and this is a thing for our next step in our research, that probably, or it is very possible, that those women have not enough normal eggs because they have a problem in DNA repair, but the problem is not a terrible problem. It's a milder problem. And when you do know it and you do find it, you can plan your fertility life and you can do the things before you are prone or unfortunately not to be able to be fertile again. So looking into all these women and looking at these genes of DNA repair that basically diminish their reserve of oocytes is another message of our study.
Thank you so much for joining us and for explaining that very exciting research that you're doing and explaining the implications that it has on so many people around the globe. And what you're doing at Hadassah is inspiring. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Hadassah On Call, New Frontiers in Medicine, brought to you by Hadassah, the Women's Zionist Organization of America. The largest Jewish women's organization in America, Hadassah enhances the health of people worldwide through medical education, care, and research innovations at the Hadassah Medical Organization. For more information on the latest advances in medicine, please visit Hadassah.org. And to hear more episodes in this podcast series, please visit Hadassah.org/podcasts. I'm Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.